With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Do you feel differently about Isaiah Thomas being snubbed from the Dream Team now that the audio is out of Michael Jordan admitting he told Rod Thorne he would not play next to him in episode 3 of Jack McCollum's The Dream Team tapes? And do you feel differently about Jordan?
You know, I don't personally. I'm not surprised by the information. Jack McCollum says on the podcast that Jordan was asked 100 times about it and kept saying, you know, either he had no comment or he had nothing to do with it or no Isaiah questions, and then he talked to him one time, and he just flat out told him, yeah, I talked to Rod Thorne. I told him I don't want to play next to that guy, and I don't think that's a surprise. I don't think he was alone. Supposedly, he says that Rod Thorne told him that Chuck feels the same way, and that they weren't even going to invite him, and I know that Magic had problems with him at that point, and Larry Bird had problems with him, so all that stuff is true. Jordan doesn't like the idea that he's the one that rejected him. I don't know that if in his mind that conversation, they'd already rejected him, so he felt like he wasn't the guy. I have no idea, but, I mean, if I'm Michael Jordan, I would have felt the same way. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't feel differently about Isaiah. I think he earned his snub, and I don't feel any differently about Michael Jordan. I think it's interesting that the audio is out there because it does contradict what he said, and it makes you feel like he wasn't being completely honest, and that there was this sort of conspiracy of silence about the whole thing. But again, I think Isaiah earned it, and I got very little sympathy for him.
The story that won't die, I never bought that Jordan didn't have a say into whether or not Isaiah Thomas was on the Dream Team. They selected the team on September 21st, 1991, 3 months after Michael Jordan finally won his first NBA title, and they added the two players, Clyde Drexler and Christian Laettner, on May 2nd or of the following year when he was on his way to number two. There was not a more powerful player in the NBA, so of course it stood to reason why he would have a say. And when you look at what he said in his documentary, if you want to call it that, he was making his case, but it wasn't believable. And I think this probably underscores and confirms that, because it also reminds us that this wasn't necessarily a documentary as much it was a video tribute. And I think we heard Sam Smith tell our friends out in San Francisco over the weekend that Jordan was lying about a lot of what was put into the Last Dance. And I think he said it best. He said, this is sort of like when you see the disclaimer, based on a true story. This was based on a true story. I still loved Rudy. I still loved Hoosiers, but they were fictional parts of those stories that were told. And I think the Last Dance is similar to that. So I don't know that I was surprised by this. And I think it makes all the sense in the world that he did not want Isaiah on the team because he didn't like him.
No, he clearly didn't like him. He wasn't the only one that didn't like him. It was Charles Barkley. It was Larry, perhaps. I mean, listen, Isaiah was a fantastic player. Nobody has ever disputed that. I mean, you could, even Michael on the documentary, he said, what, Isaiah was second or third best point guard of all time behind Magic. So he obviously, as a player, holds him in a really high regard. But listen, if you're going to be an a-hole all the time, people aren't going to want to work with you, and people aren't going to want to have you on their team. The Dream Team was going to beat everybody by 50 points regardless of Isaiah Thomas being on the team or not. Why would you want to have somebody that you don't like that most of the guys on the team, at least a majority of them, do not like? Why would you want to spend time with that guy when you're out in Barcelona having a nice time whooping everybody in the Olympics? So I have more respect for Michael Jordan, honestly. I would prefer if he just came out and said it. Yeah, I kept Isaiah off the team to clear it up so we don't have to listen to this grainy audio that sounds like it was recorded on a potato. But, I mean, listen, good for Michael, all right? Screw Isaiah.
I don't feel any differently about Isaiah Thomas being snubbed from the Dream Team. And it wasn't just Jordan. Sure, you hear in this clip that Michael Jordan didn't want to play with him. And he says in the clip that Rod Thorne says Charles Barkley didn't want to play with him. And I'm sure most of the players on that Dream Team had a problem with him because he was a jerk and nobody liked him. That's the bottom line. So I don't feel differently. I don't feel differently about Jordan. David, I think you said it best about the last Dance. I mean, it's not a documentary. It's a film, and it's a film skewed to tell the story through the lens of Michael Jordan's perspective. So I don't really necessarily feel differently about Jordan either.
We all misremember things, right? I mean, it's like a game of telephone. So by the time it gets all the way back around, and if you're asked the same question over and over and over every time you sit down to talk to people, like I'm sure Michael Jordan is about the Isaiah Thomas, the Dream Team, and we talked about it before. Look at the roster, okay? Who was not going to be on the team so that Isaiah could be on the team? And especially at the position he played. And to Kevin's point, they were going to win by 25, 30, 50 points a game anyway. So, I mean, you know, Isaiah Thomas is he's not quite, but he's almost as much of a fake Chicagoan as D-Wade.
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game?
I mean, it's about baseball, yeah.
Or did you get here late?
Multiple reports suggest the owners have backed away from a 50-50 revenue sharing split and will present a more flexible alternative to players as early as today. How confident are you that owners and players will strike a deal before June 1st?
I think it's hard to put a number on it percentage-wise. I think I've seen some people really be optimistic in 90% or so projection or prediction. And it's encouraging. It's encouraging when you see the spirit of compromise being the story that is coming out of the negotiations. And when you don't hear for days any sort of news of a stumbling block or an obstacle that can't be overcome, we have gotten to the point where there seems to be an acceptance level. There's going to be some difficulty in terms of the health and the safety and the testing and some of those details and some of the discipline it's going to require players to have to not do certain things they're used to doing in the course of playing baseball. But I think that you're seeing both sides also recognize that there needs to be a compromise to come together to save the sport, because if you don't play this season, then you don't, and it comes down to a financial disagreement, then that's not good for anybody. So I think there's some promising signs. You saw down in Tampa yesterday, 14 Rays gathered to do some baseball activity. That is something that we haven't seen in a long time. Players in a stadium doing what they love to do, doing what they're paid to do. So these are positives, and you don't want to get too carried away, because the first formal presentation is supposed to come today. I think that June 1st is a reasonable target for Major League Baseball owners and players, because then it gives you 2 weeks to logistically figure things out for teams to get to their spring training sites of choice. And then you can target July 4th as that first week in July as an opening day scenario. That is all predicated on them making more progress this week. But yesterday, the signs continue to show reasons for optimism.
I got to tell you, I am so pumped up at the idea that they're going to get through this thing. I understand how much money the owners are set to lose, regardless of whether they play or not. But I think that, honestly, I think the players are kind of more likely to be suspicious than they're less likely to cooperate. Let's put it that way. So I think the owners have to understand that. I think it's good they backed away from the revenue sharing. I am confident they're going to reach a deal, and I'm confident they're going to do it by June 1. I have no idea why I feel confident about it, because I shouldn't, because everything would point out that there's, again, there's this great sort of gap between the two of them. The owners think that, oh, listen, we are in serious trouble, and the players think, yeah, you're just saying that. So I don't know that that there is a ton of middle ground, but I think ultimately everybody kind of wants to get back. I think what we're seeing is a lot of restlessness around the country, a lot of people that, regardless of what's going on, they just kind of want to get to it. And I think ultimately there will be some financial deal cut, and they'll do it fairly quickly. So I think they're going to come up with a plan within the next week. It could even be that they're going to announce a return without having nailed down the financial aspect of it. I don't think they're going to let this stop them cold. I think it would look too bad.
I think that there's some positive momentum, perhaps things trending in the right direction. Maybe that's just being hopeful and wanting baseball in any kind of form or fashion, and Major League Baseball, not the KBO or the Japanese League. Although I guess, Molly, we're going to all pick Japanese teams to root for. Is that what we're going to be doing today?
We have to until we get our teams going.
I own a Hiroshima Carp ball cap, so I think I'm going to have to, by default, gravitate toward the Carp. But
I have a Fukuoka Hawks.
So there you go.
We've poster.
Two
be
of
careful.
Us already
Watch
have
it.
Teams. Yeah. I'm thinking and I'm hoping, like I said, it's a lot of just hopefulness here, but maybe the 50-50, the talk of 50-50 revenue split was the owner. It was just a negotiating tactic. It was a starting point, and they knew perhaps that was never really that realistic, and so maybe they're backing away from that, and maybe the two sides are coming together on some sort of an agreement before June 1st. I don't know about that. I mean, that's what, less than a week away. That's about what's today? The
26th? It's Monday.
Monday.
That would be Monday.
No, today's Tuesday. I'm all mixed
up.
Yeah,
but June 1st would be Monday. Welcome back, Kimbo.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I don't think they will strike a deal before June 1st, but I am confident that the two sides are trending in the right direction.
Well, they have, you know, we'll see what this proposal truly is today. But I think that if the money is right, I mean, the league is backing away from this 50-50 revenue split. If the money's right, the players are going to be all in. And if that is the case, I think June 1st could be realistic. Striking a deal by or before June 1st could be realistic, because it's all about the money. That's the thing that's going to be the breaking point for this. And if the players feel like they're being compensated correctly because they feel that they are the ones putting themselves the most at risk in this situation, then they'll be all about it. So I will say yes.
It's realistic. I mean, June 1st might be a little but we got nothing but time, right? These two sides have nothing but time to spend talking to each other. The good news is, they've negotiated. They've both made some concessions. And you haven't heard any, I'm not doing it for one penny. Like that narrative has kind of gone away, or at least their agents or MLBPA has gotten to these guys and said, hey guys, like, let's just stay off of social media. Just quiet down. Just let us do our thing. Let us, you voted us in to negotiate on your behalf. So let us do it. It's a big week for baseball because the other sports, I think by this time next week, we may know when all three of the big sports that either hadn't finished their season or hadn't started their season, NHL, NBA, MLB, we might know when this is all happening by this time next week. Let's hope.
That's a good question.
What was your takeaway from the match? Champion for Charity event. Who would you like to see in a similar event, and can you name a new foursome?
Listen, I loved that thing. I loved the heck out of it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought it was really competitive at the end, and it was amazing how they were fighting time in order to finish that thing, and I thought it was a great event. I mean, I get it. You know, Tom Brady started slow, and they never took the lead. But they went from three down. They could have been four down, and they had a couple chances to close it, and they couldn't take advantage of it, which is very difficult to do. But they lost by a stroke. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic event. I want to see more of it. My idea is my foursome would be, I think I'd have to have Rory McIlroy in it with Steph Curry. Steph Curry does like he's a scratch golfer, and he does some, you know, trick shots. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but it's extraordinary. Some of the stuff that he does just around his house with a wiffle ball golf ball. And he does all this weird kind of mini golf stuff. So I think that would be super cool. My other twosome is a little out there, but stay with me on this. So I think Bubba Watson has like his own following. I know he's not golfing particularly well as of right now, but he can hit the ball 100,000 miles. He's never had a golf lesson. He's like an everyman. People really like the guy. He would be a fun person to hear talk. And my other guy would be Kyle Williams, the 6-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle from Buffalo, now retired. This guy is 6'1" and 300 pounds. You're talking about a 300-pound golfer who apparently does not hit the ball that well off the tee, but he's a scratch golfer because of his short game. He is 6'1", 300 pounds. That's 50 pounds heavier than any other golfer on the PGA Tour by like a mile, and it would be like watching Jackie Gleason play pool. He'd be running around the greens and knocking everything up and down and in and out. I think it would be hysterical to have a 300-pound man who can move like that, who can kind of dance around the golf course.
Isn't it less of a short game, more of a squatty game? I like this idea. I really think that what we learned from the record ratings, and consider that more people watch this on Sunday, and I understand the reasons why, but more people watch this than the final round of the PGA Championship and the British Open. So definitely they're on to something here. And I think part of it is because of who was playing, but I also think part of it was because of how they packaged this for the viewers and for people back home. The mic, having everybody mic'd up and having everybody participate, that is something that I think you can take away. And that the question is, what is the biggest takeaway? Is that other leagues can learn from this. I mean, Major League Baseball is about to enter a season without fans in the stands. There are all sorts of opportunities. And we saw during spring training, back when they were playing baseball, the value of having like Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo live mic during an ESPN broadcast. And these are opportunities for sports to kind of rethink the way that they present sports to us and package things. So that's my biggest takeaway from the match part two, because I think the match part three could be every bit as exciting and fun. You change it up. Okay, I'm not going to go for the obscure defensive lineman, although I do love the ingenuity there, Molly. That is great. You did some research there. I never would have come up with that one. Justin Thomas is the guy who was the breakout star of Sunday. Let him, you know, play in as one of the foursomes. I want Phil back. Phil Mickelson. Put him on television all the time. He's entertaining. And then the two sports people, I would think, yeah, Steph Curry is a good one. And I'm going for the obscure fourth choice to kind of match your obscurity. I'm going for Ovi. I want Alex Ovechkin. I think he would be entertaining. The drink cart would be following him closely. And the longer he golfed, the more entertaining he would be. So that would be my foursome.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. You know, take the top player from, you know, each particular sport. You can have LeBron, Mike Trout, Ovechkin, and Patrick Mahomes as a foursome. But, Molly, I kind of had the same idea as you in terms of seeing large men play golf. I had four linemen written down here. Trent Brown, Quentin Nelson, Akeem Hicks, and Lane Taylor is my foursome of just four large individuals. I think it would be very amusing to see them play golf. I think the reason, it's really simple to me, the reason that this got such big ratings is partially because people are starved for sport and active competition and not rehashing things about the Dream Team or what have you. But you know, it's the star power. Listen, Tiger is perhaps the best ever. Phil is a big star. He is an all-time great. And then you've got Brady and Manning, two of the top quarterbacks of all time, one of whom still active. And I think he split his pants from what I saw on Twitter over the weekend as well, which was a fun little moment. I think it's really simple. You put stars out there. You kind of get them out of their element. You let them be themselves and just kind of banter around a little bit. People are going to watch it.
Well, my biggest takeaway was $20 million for coronavirus relief is amazing. So, yes, they should definitely do a similar event. My biggest takeaway was I get this was not your typical, you know, golf affair. But Tiger Woods, I mean, there's a lot of questions about his health. I mean, hey, he looked good. So that was my biggest takeaway. My biggest takeaways from the event. I would like to see something similar, but you'd have to have Tiger Woods involved for sure. Keep Tiger, keep Mickelson as that tandem. And I would like to see an NBA version. I'm on board with Steph Curry. And then, you know, apparently Chris Paul is a pretty good golfer. You could do Chris Paul or you can shoot for the stars here. And this is a rare time. I know Michael Jordan does not do public events like this. But I mean, for charity, for coronavirus relief, maybe you can shoot your shot and see if Michael Jordan would get involved. That would be a big deal.
Yeah, it was a great event for a great cause. And one of my biggest takeaways is that if Peyton Manning did go into the broadcast booth, that would be must-see. I don't care if it was the worst two teams in the history of the NFL. The ratings would be through the roof. He's a great entertainer, and there's no wonder he's done as many commercials as he's done. But my foursome, here we go. Jordan, Charles Barkley, Patrick Reed, and John Daly. That would be fun. That I think would be a fun group. John Daly, Pat Reed, Patrick Reed, Superman, Captain America, Charles Barkley, and Jordan. There you go.
That is an unbelievably great question.
The University of Michigan president cautioned in the Wall Street Journal not to get too far ahead in counting on college football's return in the fall, which is contingent on students returning to campus. Meanwhile, officials at SEC schools paint a different picture. Which is closest to the truth?
Well, I think the closest to the truth is probably college football is on its way back, along with the other sports. But I do think that Mark Schlissel, the president of the University of Michigan, he's an immunologist, and I think that he kind of reminded everybody that this has a process to follow, and the students coming back on campus is something that they haven't decided yet at the University of Michigan, and other schools, you know, have done so, but I think it's kind of sporadic, and not to count on anything before you get those students back on campus and it's deemed safe for everyone to be there. I think he also, you know, wisely doused the idea or kind of dampened enthusiasm if people are expecting to get, you know, the big house full next year. It's not going to be likely to happen. And what you heard from him was sobering reality. And I think in his state, Central Michigan, Western Michigan, not Michigan State so far, but a lot of schools have already said that they're going to welcome students back on campus for fall semester. Ohio State is welcoming football players back, you know, in a couple weeks. Illinois has already begun that process of saying players could come back. So it's gradual, but his words should not be overlooked or assumed, because I think that, you know, he reminded people that there are some tough questions still to answer. And I think that when you hear it from him, it's more than just trying to be a wet blanket. I think he's trying to, you know, be the voice of reason here. And, you know, we can be excited about college football once it's deemed safe that college football can return. Down in the SEC, I think that I cringed when I read a couple stories over the weekend about how they don't have, you know, testing ideas in place, and they're not worried about this or that, weren't worried about that, and they're telling students there will be football on Saturday afternoon at Auburn. And I just think that, you know, this was a welcome reminder that, yeah, you can get excited about college football in the appropriate time when it's right to get excited about college football, but there are certain things and check marks that you need to or checkpoints you have to pass first before you get to that point.
Yeah, I think this is a really difficult conversation to have, because I think that people are just sort of forging ahead and thinking that everything is okay, and you know, not really paying as close attention to what's happening as other people. And you know, it is just it's just a cold you know, bucket of water poured on things when you hear someplace like Michigan, you know, with the president saying that whoa, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. It's the correct way of responding, frankly, because everyone has a different role. So the football coach can be all rah-rah and hoping to get going. Did he say that they had to be in class, right? Not just like on campus doing remote stuff, right? It was a little bit different than, and I don't know if he meant it to be that much different, but I thought it was slightly
He said
altered.
The direct quote, Mully, is if there is no on-campus instruction, then there won't be intercollegiate athletics, at least at Michigan.
So does on-campus, if you're living in a dorm and Zooming from there, is that on-campus instruction?
I don't think they would welcome students back unless they were willing to put them in the classroom.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Because I think there are you hear differing ideas from different places about that. I think that, again, you know, they got a couple of recruits. They had a linebacker yesterday, and they all the coaches were doing cartwheels. It was kind of funny to see the defensive coordinator, to see Jim Harbaugh doing a cartwheel and pointing at some. I just was amused by it, but I guess that's kind of maybe an early cartwheel. Yeah, I would have to agree with, you know, I will follow the science, and if someone has a better understanding of the science, then I'll listen to them.
I feel like that's a pretty safe bet, and it seems like a lot of people, for whatever reason, don't trust science. I can't explain why, but I think that's pretty much a safe way to go. And, you know, Michigan saying this and being cautious or reticent, I don't know what the right word is here, but I think that they're just being smart about it, and they're realizing that, listen, if we're not going to have people on campus and we're not going to have students here, we're not going to bring back football players and basketball players to make money, you know, unpaid, to make money for the university if they're the only ones there, putting themselves at risk. So I'm sure a lot of officials at SEC schools are just very, very dependent on football. Listen, all of these big schools are dependent on football, but I think I would trust probably the chairman of, or the president rather, of Michigan than I would somebody from, say, Auburn.
Well, I'm 4-for-4 on this one. Yes, I will trust the first physician scientist to lead the University of Michigan. I got to trust the scientists here. So that's who I'm leaning towards.
Boy, this is tough. It's tough to understand it. I guess it makes sense that if students aren't on campus, why should the fall sports teams be allowed on campus? But at the end of the day, what everybody has to remember is safety first, of course. But all the people that are the anti-sports crowd, which probably aren't listening to us right now, is that the sports, specifically men's football and basketball, pays for everything. And not just sports. It pays for the science. It pays for the math. It pays for the arts. So I would think that this president is going to get a lot of pushback. Lots of pushback from boosters. I bet Michigan's endowment is pretty spectacular. And yeah. if this guy was to pull, I'm just saying, if Ohio State is playing football, if Wisconsin and Illinois and Northwest, you know, if Michigan tries to stand alone, that is going to be, and then if they were to stand alone, are they all of a sudden going to open up the transfer portal like immediately when that decision is made, and then all the 50 whatever 80 whatever scholarship athletes on Michigan's football team are allowed to transfer to other schools wherever they want and play this fall? I mean, it's really crazy. But I could see something like the SEC will just be playing the SEC. The Big Ten will only be playing the Big Ten, like what they're talking about in baseball. So there'd be like a home and home. So Illinois and Northwestern would play a home and home at Champaign and Evanston. They play twice. They wouldn't have this, you know, out of state, out of conference games and traveling very far. Lots of bus trips. So we'll have to wait and see.
So, Dustin, just to follow up that, $185 million is what the athletic department's budget was last year. And Schlissel specifically addressed that idea by saying, quote, "So although trouble in a $185 million unit is a big deal, it isn't of the scale that it threatens the university."
Ooh, that's a good question.
Is Reggie Bush correct when he said paying athletes, quote, could destroy some people? Even if accurate, is Bush the right guy to say it? And does his past give him good perspective, or does it make him a hypocrite?
Well, I think that it's a very interesting comment. I don't think he meant it the way that people have taken it because of his past and because of the scandal involved with having to give back a Heisman Trophy and all the rest of it. But I do think that that what he's actually trying to say is that there are people that don't know anything about how to handle money. There's a lot of us out there. And I think that, you know, when you give money to people that aren't kind of financially literate, you can create all sorts of problems for them in terms of, you know, people kind of hanging on to them and people taking advantage of them and losing their money. So I think this is meant more about the education, the financial education of players that come from, you know, very poor backgrounds. I don't think that he's kind of talking about some of the stuff that he went through. And I don't think that he's necessarily wrong. I think we've seen a lot of people be taken advantage of and losing money and professional athletes that have run afoul of all sorts of problems because they didn't understand anything about their finances. They didn't grow up with any money and they didn't have any way of understanding how to save money, how to invest it, how to go about it. And they've relied on people that have taken advantage of them. So I think it's an accurate statement. Unfortunately, I don't think he's the guy that carries kind of the gravitas to say it because of the fact that he took money when he was in school and he got himself and his school in big trouble over it. But I think it's an actually very interesting point. And I think that if it was someone else, then you would consider it just good perspective. But because it's him, he's considered a hypocrite. I don't think he meant it that way. And I think it is meant from a good place. It's just been received in the wrong way.
Well, it's because it's Reggie Bush is that it was taken out of context. And I think that's part of the thing to remember here is that the headline referred to on ESPN.com about it will destroy some people. And I think it was perceived that Reggie Bush was against this idea of paying athletes for their likeness, when in fact, this was a cautionary tale. He was trying to explain, and he's a very difficult guy to defend. I understand that because of his past and because of what things that he did at USC and because of what happened to him as a college quote-unquote student-athlete. But I think what he was trying to explain was that now you've opened the door to having, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds being taken advantage of in the way that he felt like he was after he got a little bit of money. And the fact that there are people that are going to be wanting your you know, they're having their hands out and having your best interests at heart, when in fact that's not what they have in mind at all. And that if you make too many wrong decisions, you're going to be destroyed. That could destroy you. And I think that's the word that he used, and that's the word the headline focused on. When in fact, when you read the entire story, as I tried to read all his comments, was that he was trying to say, okay, this could be, you know, fraught with peril, if you want to put it that way. Or this could be a lot of things that you don't anticipate happening that sounds good, but there could be some bad things because learn from my example, because I didn't know this along the way. It's kind of like saying, okay, you win the lottery, great, but now people have all these stories about what happens to them after they get a little bit of money. So I think it was a little bit out of context. I'm not sure he's a hypocrite. I think he was trying to express himself in a way that he used a couple of words that were kind of magnified that didn't fully, to me, represent the message he was trying to send.
I think there's a little bit of hypocrisy here, but it was clearly the quote was taken out of context and sensationalized and used for a headline to try to draw people in and be like, holy crap, Reggie Bush said what? Kind of one of those type deals. So, I mean, he made a lot of money, both in college and in the pros. So that's why I feel it's a little bit hypocritical, but I don't begrudge him for making money. He was a very good player in college and in the pros. A lot better in college, let's be honest. But any player that gets money, whether it's illegal or not, while they're in college, I don't begrudge them at all. And I think his point about financial guidance is a good one, and it's a cogent one, not only for student athletes. I think, you know, balancing budgets and financial advice and learning how to, you know, do your taxes and just simple stuff like that. I think all financial education should definitely be stressed more. I agree with him there.
That's correct. Since Reggie Bush said he was taken out of context in this Playboy interview. Nice to see Playboy still doing interviews.
That's why I read it.
Exactly, for the interviews. So I'm just going to totally disregard the quote. But yes, the NCAA should institute some sort of financial education on for how athletes can manage their money, because especially we've seen too many stories of players that go to the pros and are, I guess, financially destroyed because they mismanage their money. So if it starts in college, hey, that even better.
Well, I don't think any of us thought that this was the perfect plan, the pain of the college athlete or them making money off their likeness, but it was a step in the right direction. I don't think he's being a hypocrite at all. I think he has good perspective on this. And while, you know, everybody's definition of destroy some people, it differs. Maybe Reggie doesn't sleep well at night because he had the Heisman Trophy taken away from him. Maybe he sleeps like a baby because he's got millions of dollars in the bank. I don't know, but I think his words come from a place of experience and his good perspective on the topic.
All righty. That is the 5 at 5. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 to the score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.